Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we are in the Tri-Town Advice Givers Studio in St. John, Indiana, with Leah Conradi of One Region.
Good morning, Leah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. To start off, I always ask everyone, just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, my. So I grew up in Michigan City and graduated high school and moved to Denver. So I went to the University of Denver. And then after Denver, I moved out to D.C. and worked in Washington, D.C. for about 4 years. And then went back to the University of Denver for a graduate degree and then moved to California and finally moved back home. So I've done the tour de Leah. I've lived all over the country. And I consciously made the decision to move back, and I'm really glad that I made that decision. And so that's a little bit about me.
So you said finally move back. So was it always a plan to move back, or were you like,
no,
I'm never going back?
Yeah. Well, then, I think it evolved. I mean, yeah. In high school, I was like, I'm out of here. And then, loved Colorado, enjoyed DC. But I think once I got to DC, I realized that I was looking for a sense of community that I grew up with in Michigan City. And so I continued moving across the country. And by the time I got to California, I realized that I was homesick. And so I did, I would say, finally move back. I didn't think, when I was 18 that I'd ever move back here or live here. But yeah, I really like it. So, and I like having the city of Chicago right there. Mm-hmm. We live in a really great place.
We definitely have access to a lot of stuff.
Yes, we do. We're really lucky.
Yeah. So let's just jump in. One Region. When did you take over in the position that you're at? And how long has One Region actually been around?
Yeah, good question. So One Region's been around for, probably like 20 years. But it's gone through many versions of itself. So it started as the Northwest Indiana Quality of Life Council, which was created by the universities and colleges in Northwest Indiana. And then the Northwest Indiana Times created an organization called One Region, One Vision. And they merged, the two groups merged in about 2012, 2013. And the organization continues to evolve. So I started with One Region about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And in that time, I would say, like most organizations, and we have to continue to look at our, how we stay relevant, what is our impact, and what purpose are we really serving? So we changed our mission statement. Our mission is now to grow population, attract and retain talent, and increase household income in the three counties, so Lake, Porter, and LaPorte counties.
Okay. So jumping off of that mission, what are kind of the initiatives that you guys are working on to move towards that mission?
Yeah. And that's pretty lofty goals and a pretty big mission statement. So, I think what I set out to do is looking at who's doing what in the region and how do we fit into that. And based on that, I see us really working to do civic engagement around regional projects that would drive population growth, attract and retain talent, increase household income. So in January, we launched an initiative called Lake County on Track, which was focused on the South Shore Line's West Lake extension. So building from Hammond down to basically Dyer Munster, a new rail line as part of the South Shore Line. And so part of that was just doing public meetings, civic engagement to share information with people about the train. And then we've also been pretty focused on double tracking, which is adding a double track from Gary to Michigan City. And that would decrease the commute time from Michigan City to Chicago. That commute time is currently an hour and 50 minutes, and now it'll be just over an hour once double tracking is complete.
So with the two rail projects that I think we've all been talking about for a long time around here, what do you think will be the impact if those and when those things happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, if you decrease the commute time, we'll use Michigan City as an example. If you're decreasing the commute time from Michigan City to Chicago, that impacts, I mean, it has the ripple effect across the region, and it makes living in a place like Michigan City much more realistic as a commuter community into Chicago. And the same could be said for like Munster Dyer. You already have a significant amount of people driving in Chicago or driving to the Hammond station and then taking the train in. And this opens up the opportunity for people to decrease that commute time or, you know, the drive time from Hammond or even Chicago and the ability to take the train, which ultimately attracts and retains talent in Northwest Indiana.
And then I think inversely drives up other things too.
Yeah, yeah. Like property value will increase, mm-hmm. the demand for housing increases, which increase, you know, drives right. the price up for housing, which is good. So resale values would be high. You know, the schools would grow, assuming you're attracting young families, which is great for schools to grow. And I mean, ultimately drives population growth, which has a ripple effect as well.
So other than the rail projects, are you guys, what else are you focused on?
Yeah, so we have two other initiatives. One is a benchmark initiative of comparing our region to other regions in the country. And we've looked at, and when I say we, one region partnered with our local universities or economists at those universities. And we did some research on what are regions in the country or cities that have a success story or turnaround story in attracting and retaining talent. So we started by looking at mostly the millennial demographic. And from there, we kind of built out what we wanted to see. So we honed in on three places. It was New Jersey because of its bi-state relationship with New York City and even Philadelphia. And Hoboken and Jersey City in New Jersey have one of the highest concentrations of millennials in the country.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it wasn't always that way. But then as you go further out in New Jersey, they have a issue with out-migration of millennials and even empty nesters. So I think it's interesting that the state has, again, one of the highest concentrations of millennials, but then the rest of the state is struggling to figure out how to retain their talent. So so that was one of our first places. The second place is Pittsburgh, and we're looking at Pittsburgh because of their history in steel manufacturing, but the city of Pittsburgh has also grown by about 8% millennials over the last 5 years, which is pretty significant for, a Rust Belt city. And then we're going to look at Denver as well. And Denver attracts about 12,000 millennials per year over the last 5 years, and that is rather significant. And Denver was not always the city that it is today. They've made significant investments in their infrastructure. And so what we want to share is by making investments in infrastructure, you can make the quality of place better, which would drive attracting and retaining talent or people.
So back to the first one, Hoboken, what's the big draw there for the high population of millennials?
Yeah. So we just returned from New Jersey. We took a group of about 30 people, and we looked at Jersey City, Hoboken, Newark, Asbury Park, and Trenton. And Hoboken was, and Jersey City, they were both heavy industry, and they started to do development on their waterfronts. And by putting development on the waterfront, so on the Hudson River across from Manhattan, once they did that and opening up the waterfront, it drove people to live there and young people. And it was also because of the housing costs in Manhattan driving people out of that area. So it became an affordable place to live.
So they're actually going across the river to work then?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of them work in Manhattan. They have a commuter rail line. They also have ferries that go across the Hudson River. But it takes about, 20 minutes to get to, within the heart of Manhattan.
Right.
They have the accessibility and connectivity to Manhattan where the jobs are. But Jersey City and Hoboken are working to create office space so that jobs are also then in New Jersey as well. So.
And with the co-working space and all that other stuff, there's so many opportunities. I mean, you don't need to be sitting anywhere to do 90%
of jobs. Yeah, there's a lot of teleworking now. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And also you said Denver, what's been the big boom out there in the last 5 years? Do you know?
Well, I think it's attractive for a lot of reasons. And one of those reasons is outdoor recreation. I think that, you know, millennials are looking for places that are where there's something fun to do after work. And they're also looking for places that are open-minded, that have the connectivity, accessibility, and walkability. And Denver recently built light rail, and they're continuing to build that out. And in doing so, it's made Denver a much more livable city. And that has attracted people as well.
Is that so they don't have to buy cars, or just so that they don't have to jump in them all the time to run down the street? Or
yeah, I think it's a little of both. I mean, millennials like to have, and it's not just millennials, empty nesters like it too. Like, they're really attracted to transit-oriented development where everything is like right at your fingertips. So it's development about a half a mile outside or around a train station, or it could even be a bus station, basically transit.
Right.
And when you have that, you don't have to have a car, which is appealing to a lot of people to not have a car if mm-hmm. everything's right there. So to get to your job, to get groceries, whatever it may be, and then your house, if it's all right there, it's perfect.
So what's the reason you guys are focusing on the millennials?
Yeah, so we're focused on millennials because, one, they are our future. And it's not just millennials, it's future generations, the generations that come after millennials.
Sure.
But if you're looking to grow a region in the United States population only grew by 1% last year. So if you're looking to grow a region within the United States, you have to focus on attracting those who are in childbearing ages or the, you know, young families. And so as people are leaving cities, we want to look to capture that growth. So as people are leaving Chicago to start a family, we want to make sure we're on their radar.
Gotcha.
And so we want to look at places like, how have other places done this?
Right.
How have they cracked that code, and how can we crack that code?
So it's really not about the quote-unquote millennials. It's about that age.
Yeah. It's how do you
it
how
just
do,
happens
yeah.
to be them right now.
Right. We gotcha. Need yeah, we need to repopulate our schools, we need to grow our tax base. And it needs to be smart growth. I mean, we have parts of the region that are growing rapidly, and we have other parts that are not growing as rapidly or have been stagnant in growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to replenish that growth.
Yeah, and the whole thing with Amazon, like, I know it's a huge long shot for the area to get it, but mm-hmm. even the fact of putting a plan together could mm-hmm. help
absolutely
attract something else and do something.
Yeah, I think it is a long shot, and I think they had like over 200 applications. I think a lot of places in the country
sure.
applied. But I think ultimately, I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll attract another company, exactly. but it also is a really good exercise for our cities and region to go through to look at, mm-hmm. you know, what are our assets? What do we have to offer? And how do we sell it? So I think it was a great exercise to go through.
Right. And what can we do long term to attract a company like that, or a company a quarter that size? It doesn't
right.
matter.
Like, exactly.
But what do we have to do to attract that kind of thing?
Yep. Yeah. Agreed.
So benchmarking was the number two. What's the number three initiative?
Yeah, we're going to do an engagement strategy with millennials. So we'll probably launch that in January. But we want to do something where we have essentially a conversation with millennials or young professionals, basically. And this is about age 25 to 40, to go through a strategy of what is it they want to see in the region and how do we make that happen. So part of One Region's goal is that what we do is action-oriented, right? So we can't just sit around the table and continue talking about it and do nothing about it. So in this process, we want to take the ideas and translate them to action. And the action components can be you know, as small as like creating a podcast, writing an op-ed, but basically getting information out there, which ultimately, if you're getting people enthused about an idea or passionate about an idea, it will lead to action. So we've looked at programs across the country, and there's one in Atlanta that was rather successful. As a result of their program, they had several people run for office, and then they had a couple of groups pursue legislative changes to accomplish what they were putting forth as a solution to some of the issues that they saw. And then two groups created nonprofits to continue working on their issue areas. So one was about transit, of how do they make Atlanta more accessible in terms of transit. So it was pretty neat.
And I think Atlanta over the past few years has done a lot of things to increase their popularity. I don't know all the
details
growing.
Of
it. Yeah.
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 But I think they were a bigger hub to begin with, a major city versus the commuter city. So the engagement for the millennials, have you started that yet, or that's coming up?
No, coming up.
Okay. So are you starting to look for people for that yet, or is it still planning stages right now?
We're in planning stages right now, but we will be looking for people. So we'll be doing a lot of outreach, probably like Facebook, social media, the newspaper, podcasts like this, and radio shows, but using our media outlets to attract people across the region to come to a summit and basically hear about what's going on in the region, and then give them the opportunity to join a team, if you will, or become a civic strategist to continue working on the issue.
And just in general, since you were here, went away, and came back, what's the attitude of the millennials in that manner? Are they coming back to home, or are these more transit people, or what is the millennium makeup of Northwest Indiana, if you know?
I don't know. I do know that we have a pretty good boomerang effect. That's those who leave and then come back, and they usually come back when they're having children and want to be close to their family. So their parents are here, or siblings are here, and that's when they come back. So that's called the boomerang effect. So I guess technically I'm part of the boomerang of leaving and coming back.
Yeah.
And we do have that, but what we want to do is we want to capture people. Really, the brain drain starts in high school. As soon as you leave for college, and usually it's like IU, Bloomington, Purdue, West Lafayette, whatever it may be. But as soon as they leave the region, they don't always come back. They'll go to a big city like Chicago, which is great. But then it's, you know, how do we, like I said, how do we continue to either bring them back right after college, and that could be jobs, or how do you capture them as they're leaving the city? So that's what we want to do, and provide, like, maybe living in Northwest Indiana, if they get a job in Chicago and we're more affordable, kind of like the Hoboken Jersey City strategy,
right?
Why not live here? Like, if we can provide that quality of life or the amenities that they're looking for, then we would capture them then.
So, and just to kind of be devil's advocate on that, so the Hoboken area, is it somewhat condensed? Because I think you said it was a river walk and stuff. Mm-hmm. So here it's more of a spread out. There's no cohesive area to do something like that.
I mean, if you're looking at like Schererville, Dyer, like that's more of like the families. But if you're looking to create a place that is similar to Jersey City, Hoboken, like that's more of an urban area and closer, like you need to be really close to the city. And the closest place we have to the city is Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Gary.
Right.
But if you can create essentially transit-oriented development and start creating, like, you know, downtown's Hammond's downtown, you know, if there are, I'm, you know, visionary here, like if there are, you know, the bars, restaurants, apartments, and then also the gateway station into Chicago, then it becomes a place to live.
Right.
So I think we have I guess my point is, I think we have the bones, we have the structure for it, we just need to do it.
Right. And I think there has to be some deep change in ideology of the region first.
Yeah, you know, I think it's happening. I think there's momentum. I think that especially because of the train, I think that people realize, wow, we have so much to offer. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we start to invest in it, right, the investment piece is the hardest piece.
Right.
Because you got to spend money.
I think that's kind of what I meant, the mentality of, okay, we're going to have to spend huge dollars.
And that's what Denver did.
To do something.
Denver spent a ton of money. New Jersey, Hoboken, and Jersey City spent a ton of money.
Yeah.
Newark, same story. You've got partners coming together saying, we need to make investments. We need to spend money.
Is it a private-public partnership type thing in those areas?
Yeah, generally, yes. I mean, bringing in developers, recruiting developers, but then, you know, the city really owning it of what is it that we want this to look like. And it's a two-way street, so... you know, in Jersey City, we heard about the municipality really needs to determine what they want and how they want it to look, because a developer could just come and say, we're going to build whatever we want. Mm-hmm. And that's not always what is good for a region or municipality.
Yeah.
So it is, I would say, very much a two-way conversation. But then you also need to be talking with businesses about, you know, corporate citizenship of, okay, if you're established here, we need your help investing in this. This isn't just on the municipality. It's not just on the developers. It's also on the businesses as well.
I completely agree with that. And I think that's one big thing that education misses is like we're educating to an industrial revolution type education system.
Yeah.
Where if people would just go talk to business leaders and the people that are actually in the know, we could maybe change the education system. So when they come out of high school, they're ready to do this, or when they come out of college, they're ready to do that. And I think that communication is lacking in a lot more fields than just development or so.
I don't, you know, when we started this benchmark initiative, what I wanted to do is make sure that what we were doing was relevant and applicable to business leaders and municipalities. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to understand like what they saw were issues in attracting and retaining talent. Like, what are our challenges? Why, you know, what do you see? And then kind of framing our research around that. And one of the big things was perception, that people, when as they're recruiting talent, that they're like, oh, I don't know that I want to live there for, you know, a variety of reasons. And and New Jersey has had to overcome very similar issues, and they're working on it. So I think, you know, if you get momentum going, and really it starts with just a few people of really good leadership and people who are constantly out there talking about the positive things that we do have, I mean, that's how it starts to – that's the ripple effect. That's how change starts to happen.
Yeah, because I definitely think that Hoboken, New Jersey had the same – stigma as Gary, Indiana.
I mean, there, and I would say across New Jersey, especially along the Hudson River, like Jersey City and Hoboken, industrial areas, Jersey City was rail yards, brownfields, I mean, you know, cleanup sites. And they had to go through a lot of cleanup, but they built something. They made investments, and that drove people to live there. But they're still, I mean, they still have other issues that, you know, I think we face in the region of, oh, your schools aren't good, or the public safety factor, or it's not environmentally safe. Like, you have smokestacks as you come in. And so I think there's just this perception that it can be very negative. But I think there are, you know, you can do things to work on those. So
yeah, some of it's the chicken and the egg.
Exactly.
You can't, build up this if you don't have the population to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So who are some of the names or businesses that are involved in One Region?
Well, we try to be as holistic as possible and inclusive as possible. But the, you know, our major, I guess, sponsors, if you will, are NIPSCO, People's Bank, the Northwest Indiana Times, ArcelorMittal, and they've all been very engaged. We also engage a lot with our regional universities, so like Purdue University Northwest, Valparaiso University. But, you know, I think we're looking to grow in terms of engaging corporations and our business leaders here, because, you know, we see the need to look at priorities from the business side as well as the individual citizen side. So how do you engage both groups and get them involved in setting priorities for the region?
So is that how you guys are funded too, from those major players?
Yep. We are funded mostly by corporations, and then we do get some support from municipalities.
Okay. So the business climate in this city or this area, in any area, is shifting from the big companies to the smaller players. So how do you get those type companies involved as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, and I think that's a something that the entire country has seen is what I would call like a disaggregated leadership model. So when you had organizations like a Chamber of Commerce, you know, in 1960, you had the leadership of, you know, the steel mills here. Like, you could, you had access to all these people. But then as you, as the country and world has gone through mergers and mergers, you're like, BP's CEO is not in Chicago.
Right.
You know, so as an example. So yeah, I think, you know, we need to be working with our local businesses like People's Bank, Myers-Glaros Insurance, et cetera, to engage them on what they want to see for our region, because that's change happens at the local level, and that's who we need to engage.
Definitely. So as a citizen, is there a way to get involved?
Yeah. Reach out to me. We are looking for engagement. And I think, you know, like being engaged on whether it's helping with this millennial engagement strategy or just helping with getting the word out about things like the train, that we are looking to leverage that.
Okay. So in, you said you've been with One Region about a year and a half. Were you in nonprofit situations before that?
I have a very diverse background.
Okay.
So let's see. Yes and no. Okay. I have a background in politics. So I worked for Congressman Visklosky for a while in Washington, D.C. And then I kind of transitioned into water resources. So I worked at a nonprofit in Washington, D.C. on Great Lakes policy. So I worked very closely with the Great Lakes Congressional Task Force. So all the members in Congress from the Great Lakes. And then I went to grad school for a master's in business administration, so an MBA. And then I moved to California and worked for a very large engineering firm and was doing government affairs and water resources as well, so water infrastructure. And then I came back here and was doing some more work in the Great Lakes field in Chicago. And then this opportunity popped up. And I actually, when I moved back, I really was looking for something in Northwest Indiana and had a hard time finding what I was looking for. And so
gotcha.
Ended up in Chicago. Yeah. So I have a very diverse background.
So is there one piece of advice that someone that wanted to get into the nonprofit or the public-private sector type situation, that something that maybe you made a mistake for at the beginning or something, how to break into that type of work?
Yeah. No, I think it's a really good question. You know, sometimes when you talk with like students in college and you're like, oh, what do you want to do? And they'll say, well, I want to work for a nonprofit. And that can mean a wide variety of things. And so my advice to anyone is trust your gut and do something you're passionate about. And the rest will work out, whether that's at a corporation or – I mean, you can make a difference in a corporation. You can make a difference from the municipal level. You can make a difference at a nonprofit. But find what you are passionate about and trust your gut and go for it.
So how do you find what you're passionate about?
Oh, you just got to try a lot of things.
Okay.
I mean, I've really enjoyed – I mean, I'm clearly very passionate about Northwest Indiana. I believe in it. I also love water resources. Like I grew up on Lake Michigan. I've understood, you know, the balance of manufacturing or industry and the environment. So right. I love working on those issues because it can't just be one-sided. There are also, you know, very like on the corporate side, there are things I've really enjoyed there. But I've never, I think who you work with makes a difference.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you just gotta find your way.
And the only reason I asked, I have a sophomore in high school, so.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, so like I discovered environmental science when I was a sophomore or junior in high school, and I've been taking that class, realized, wow, I actually really enjoy this.
Yeah.
And then when I was in college, I took another class, I actually became a geography major, and people were like, what are you going to do with that? Yeah. I'm like, don't worry about it. I love it. And it was true. I mean, I'm using that degree now in, you know, urban planning and regional thinking.
So is that what your undergrad is in?
Yeah, I have a BA in geography. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Telling my parents that was interesting. They're like, okay. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I did really well in it. I found my niche and I knew the rest was going to work out because I was very happy doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it worked out.
Start doing something and you figure out you're not happy with it, you need to change it immediately.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And that's hard. You know, there's actually there was a good podcast on Freakonomics about how important it is to quit. Like if you're – because in our culture, quitting is like the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. But quitting is actually a really positive thing. If you can look at your – you know, look yourself in the mirror and say like, I'm not very good at this and I don't like it.
Right.
You need to quit.
Right. Yeah, there was a book about that years ago. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but that's a good topic that definitely gets overlooked.
Yeah. And in school, we're trained, like, you have to be good. You have to be good at everything.
Right.
And really, that's not, I mean, not reality.
Again, I could talk about education forever.
So, I don't know. I guess my advice to anybody is, like, especially a high school student or college student, is, like, put yourself out there. Take classes you did not think you would, you know, that look semi-interesting and see if you like it.
Right.
You don't have to commit to it. So, even when I was in business school, they wanted me to pick, like, a concentration. I was like, this is a two-year program. I'd rather just take classes and learn as much as possible as opposed to becoming, like, hyper-focused on something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that worked for me. That doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. The MBA program. So you don't have to pick a like accounting or marketing
you
or you don't
I
have
was,
to. Then?
I was the only one that didn't. All my friends were like marketing, rebel. Accounting. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to take classes that look appealing.
Yeah, I mean, if you still get the degree, it doesn't really
matter. That's how I felt. I was like, just exactly. Yes. Yeah. Cool. So, yeah.
So you've mentioned podcasts a couple times. Any book or podcast recently that gave you a big aha moment that either changed something you were doing or doubling down on something you were already doing?
Oh, that's a really good question. Let me think about that. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but there's a really good one, and I listened to it a while ago, and I'm not going to be able to think of the name. It was a TED Radio Hour on NPR about cities and how to design cities to make them more livable. And so that one was really eye-opening for me of how to make like a park, like by changing a park and making it more open by like if it's too – if the trees are – or I would say like bushes are too tall and you can't see into the park, it's not as welcoming, right? So like something as simple as like, okay, we're going to trim these bushes or hedges so that you can see into the park and then people want to go. So like very simple things can change the dynamic of the place that you live.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
So a little nudge in the right direction makes it more.
Exactly. Or like there was another city looking at bike routes and how to make, you know, moving the bike routes essentially off of like very busy streets. And then you can get to work faster because you're not in with all the traffic. If you're on your bike, it was very interesting. Yeah. So I don't know.
So was it like urban planning or was it just the little things like that?
I mean, there was some little urban tweaks. Planning, but little tweaks, like, you know, thinking, I guess, taking a little bit of a different approach to how you think about your city and what you're doing or, you know, beautification of the city, but that it goes a long way.
Right.
Yeah. And then I listened to a lot of other podcasts and usually get little ideas here and there. But, you know, I think truly like idea development and ideation comes from like listening to podcasts, but also like doing like field trips, like the show and tell, like seeing something or having a conversation. And all ideas I think are born immature and you have to have conversations about an idea to really get it to maturity. So it's not exactly, you know, it's got to go through change. An idea is never born perfect.
And I think that's maybe a misconception some people have, like, to have this great idea, it's got to be something brand new. It doesn't. It you just take something and tweak it a little bit, make it better, make it more real for five people, and it's a great idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So outside of one region, anything that occupies your time, any hobbies, anything like that?
Whew,
if you have time?
Yeah, if I have time. No, I love to travel, so having lived all over the country, I have friends all over the country. So I like to travel when I can, but I also love being here. So I can be a bit of a homebody. But yeah, I enjoy being in the city of Chicago and taking advantage of what the city has to offer. And then I also equally love like hiking in the dunes, being on the beach. And I love the four seasons. I've found in California how much I missed the four seasons. And I just, you know, try to embrace it, even though the winter can be a little brutal. But I do love
Michigan City off the lake.
Oh, it's so cold. Yes, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, well, that's why God invented Southwest Airlines. Just jump on a flight.
That's good.
Yeah. It was somebody from the region, which I loved.
Yeah. 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 It's one of those things that when you're in it, you don't like it. But I have an uncle that lives in San Diego and he's lived there for 30 years and he still talks about winter. He doesn't want to come back to him, but he still talks about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, when California was so weird to see those like snow, you know, what do you call those like blow up things you put in your yard that are at Christmas time.
Right.
And there's no snow around them. So it's like desert environment, these big, you know, like the snow globe the Santa. But no, I don't know. I think, you know, and honestly, moving back in the winters were probably my two concerns were, one, finding a job because I quit and moved back. And the second was the winter. Like, am I going to enjoy this? And I was pretty nervous about both. But I felt much more confident about the job piece because the city of Chicago is right here.
Right.
So I wasn't as worried about it.
And I think everything you just kind of said is the attraction for the region. Like, there is that seasonal thing. It's close to the city. I mean, it's honestly close to Michigan if you want to go that direction too.
Absolutely.
So we're in a very good spot.
We really are.
I just think it's underutilized, especially north of here, right on the lake. Very underutilized.
Yeah. And the RDA, the Regional Development Authority, is doing a lot to make investments in our lakefront. So, like, people don't even know that Whiting's lakefront is so cool. Whiting has such a great downtown. Their waterfront has been redeveloped. It is accessible. You can go in the summer. The same thing with, like, Portage. Portage has a really cool beach now that, thanks to the RDA and people like Congressman Visklosky, of, you know, recognizing that our lakefront is an asset and we need to make investments to make it accessible and user-friendly so that we are bringing people there.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about Whiting. Like, if people haven't been up there lately, they don't understand what it's like up there. It's very nice.
Even East Chicago. Like, East Chicago has a beach that has recently received investment, and there's, like, a splash pad there. I was there in mid-July, and it was packed. I mean, people are using it, which is great, but we need to get the word out that we do have these great assets. Wolf Lake is another one. I mean, we just have so – I get really excited, obviously. We have so much going for us beyond, like, just the National Lakeshore, which is also an asset. Right. Michigan City's made investments in their beach. They have a really cool waterfront pavilion. People don't even know we have a zoo in Michigan City. It is such a cool small zoo. It's great for young kids because it's small enough. Mm-hmm. But then the views of the lake are just awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely cool because with small kids, I've been there a couple times with my kids. And you can see everything.
Yes.
And then still go enjoy other things in the area. And the kids don't get too burnt out.
Exactly. It's a very good zoo for, like, five-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
And I also like it too. So,
yeah. So anything we didn't talk about that you want to bring up?
No, I think we're good. I think we covered everything.
Cool.
I mean, I think, as I said at One Region's luncheon, like, Northwest Indiana is primed to rock and roll, and we are definitely going to rock and roll. Like, I believe in this region. We have a great, great leadership in the region of those, you know, like, at the Regional Development Authority, our state representatives and senators, our mayors. Like, we've got a lot going for us, and we need to continue with the momentum to make things happen and be brave to make those investments. We cannot be afraid of change.
Right. Keep the foot on the gas.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to wrap up, what's the best way to people to get a hold of you?
Our website, www.oneregionnwi.org, and one is spelled out. That's the best way to see what we're doing and keep track of us. And emailing me, and I think there's a contact us button on the website that is the best way to get a hold of me. But yep, that's it.
Cool.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was really fun.
Cool.